Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, a look ahead to the hopes and expectations of the Czech Church as Pope Benedict prepares to make a three-day pastoral visit to the East European nation. And a conference of Anglican media officers in Rome looks at the possibility of closer ecumenical cooperation. Pope Benedict is due to leave Rome on Saturday morning, headed for Prague at the start of a three-day pastoral visit to the Czech Republic. The Pope will meet with the Czech president and government officials, travel to the city of Brno in the South Moravia region, and celebrate Mass to mark the feast of St. Wenceslas, patron saint of the nation, before returning to Rome on Monday afternoon.
The beauty of the Czech Republic depends very much on the Church and what they are proud of. What the tourists go to see is things which were created by the Church or inspired by the faith.
Archbishop Diego Cauzero is the apostolic nuncio to the Czech Republic. He sat down with Linda Bordoni, who will also be travelling to Prague for this visit, to discuss church-state relations and the hopes for the Czech Church ahead of the Pope's journey.
We had established the relations with the Czech Republic, the Czechoslovak Republic, already at the beginning of the 20s. The nuncio was also the dean of the diplomatic corps. They were suspended in 1950 because the nuncio and everybody in the apostolic nunciature was declared persona non grata.
This was during the communist regime.
Yes. Then again, nuncio went there at the beginning of the 90s, and since then we are in Prague. They still recognize us as deans of the diplomatic corps by privilege. And as for the substantial, problems of our diplomatic life, we are very much respected. So we don't have real problems with the authorities. There are certain problems existing between the Church and the Czech Republic.
Are you referring to the properties?
We have a few pending issues. One is an agreement between the Czech Republic and the Holy See, which was negotiated and then signed in 2002. But it was never ratified by the Parliament. In spite of the fact that the Parliament, the majority of the representatives in the Parliament belonged to the majority who, negotiated the agreements. Then there is a second issue.
Sorry, this agreement has to do with the properties?
No, the properties is an issue which is
issue.
Internal,
okay.
Church and state.
Right.
Of course, the Holy See is very much interested. It should be solved because it will end the sort of controversy which has always been there, causing, misunderstandings since the year 1948. This second issue, the properties of the Church, is still pending. First, the object of the properties are usually rural properties or forest properties, because the churches and the houses of the priests were always considered a property of the Church. In principle, the idea they had was what is directly necessary for the worship belongs to the Church. What is not necessary belongs to the state. So they have nationalized all the rest. They tried recently to, in a project of law, to find a solution, which was a good solution and also a good project of law for the Church and, I suppose, for everybody, because also the local administrations are interested in the solution of this, because these, properties have a sort of clause of block which is established by law, by which nobody can use them.
Mm-hmm.
So they are still there. Sweet. At times they are in the middle of a city or in the middle of a town. They should be they would be useful for the planners, but they cannot act on that. So until now, there is no solution. In spite of this project of law last year, the solution did not made any step forward. There were a few parliamentarians who were not in favor of the solution, saying that there was an excessive recompense given to the church.
That's what I was going to ask. Does the church want the properties back, or is it ready to accept compensation for them?
Oh, yes. Mainly it is compensation. At least according to this project of law, there was one-third of the properties that would be given back. And the remaining two-thirds would be compensated.
And it's quite a lot, isn't it?
Yes, it is a lot. But practically for 50 years, it has been taken from the church and it has been used by the state. So the church does not want to receive back, say, what was lost during this period. It would like to have only the properties or compensation where the properties cannot be defined anymore or the properties could not be given back because at times there is something built on them. Another pending issue is, so it is, the agreement between church and state, the properties, the cathedral.
The cathedral of
the
St.
Cathedral,
Vitus.
Yes, St. Vitus.
St. Vitus.
Yes, and that's also a special issue because the cathedral is just inside a sort of territory which is called the castle. And it is surrounded by the walls, etc. And the castle was the former residence of the king or of the emperor, and it is the actual residence of the presidency. Residence, not real. It is the place where the president lives during the normal days of work. And now, in 54, the cathedral was declared property of the state. Really not. Property of the people of the Czech Republic. And then the conclusion was that the people of the Czech Republic is the state. So
now this is very much to do with material issues, but I think the church in the Czech Republic may be quite challenged as regards spiritual issues.
Yes, yes.
Does the Czech population very much carry the scars of communism?
The first issues are rather, say, if you want material, it is true. They should be solved because they would give a sort of peace and mutual understanding between the two parties. But of course, it is true also that the main problem of the church is of a different character in the Czech Republic. It is a country that in its majority is not, say, a country of believers. It is rather, they say, we are atheists, which is not true either. But there is a very large sector of agnostics.
Why do you say it's not true that they're atheists?
Because they are not, say, directly against the recognition of a god, of a superior entity. They are against, especially, the registered religions. So, in fact, in the census in 2001, 59% of the Czech declared themselves as not affiliated to any religion. 30% more or less Catholics, and possibly 5% belonging to a lot of other Christian denominations. There are 22 or 23 officially registered in the country, and they make up altogether, I would say, no more than 5%.
But a long time has passed since the end of communism. In a sense, in 20 years, we have new generations on the scene.
No,
it
is true.
There
is a sort of hostility towards the church because the secularism of the Czech Republic is not founded only on the communist period. Usually I say that in the Czech Republic for 200 years, starting from the year, say, 1800, there has been a sort of cultural position hostile to the church. First, position was the one prevailing in the in all over Europe during the 19th century, a sort of secularism opposing religion and science. If I want to see a sort of connection, I would say this is a French position which has become prevailing all over Europe during that century. So if you want to be modern, if you want to be up to date and say in good terms with science, you cannot accept religion. Then during the Czech period, during the communist period, of course there was a different sort of secularism based on the fact that the church is accused, is blamed for refusing to accept the sort of social life or promoting a sort of social life where you have more participation, attention to the poor, etc. So 200 years of popular culture which was against the church. And the main idea at the beginning was the church is against the constitution of a new state, the Czechoslovak Republic. And now it is the church has been against, or it is a sort of force of energy which is against the establishment of a society of equality.
But I know that when the wall actually came down in 89, 90, there was a feeling, a rebirth, let's say,
yes,
of spirituality. I think people were probably starved for spirituality, and the church also was a galvanizing factor during
yes,
the years of
true,
communism.
True.
What happened?
Now, the church suffered a lot during the years of communism, especially in the Czech Republic. Also, many of the present bishops have been in prison.
Yes.
Yes. But, of course, they have lived in a situation where they feel that they are not part of the society, but a sort of organism which is against the society. In the last 20 years, of course, there was, say, sort of happiness that the walls came down. But in spite of that, I would say the church didn't find a proper way to present itself. The church is still viewed as a sort of enemy of the Czech people by a good majority. Even if there are groups, there is minority, which is the main minority in the Czech Republic, it is the 30% of the Catholics. But not only that, there are different groups, very active and very vivacious in religious life, but they are few. And what they need a sort of leadership coming probably from bishops, coming probably from the priests, in order to be able to influence again the life of the Czech Republic. And the church has many reasons for doing that because, say, the past of the Czech Republic has been depending very much from the presence of the church. I say at times that the beauty of the Czech Republic depends very much on the church. And what they are proud of is, the Czech are proud of, what the tourists go to see is things which were created by the church or inspired by the faith. That is certainly true, and the general landscape of the Czech Republic is a Christian one. Mm-hmm. You arrive, you will see Prague, and you will see that I've come here in a city of churches and beautiful churches. They have created also a sort of Baroque art, which is probably the most beautiful in Europe, and a sort of architectural style in the churches, where the churches appear, say, beautiful, joyous churches of a time when the church was victorious, something like that.
What you've been saying up to now makes me think that Pope Benedict's responsibility will be a great one in this upcoming trip.
A great one. I suppose especially it should be in the sense that it revives the church, it gives unity, and it gives a little bit of enthusiasm, of energy, of fervor to the church, bishops and priests and faithful. And that is the hope I have. Of course, miracles cannot be performed easily. But anyway, that should be the main aim of the visit of the Pope. The problems which are pending with the state will find a solution one day. But what the Church needs is a better knowledge of the faith, a sort of community convinced, full of consciousness of the role to play in the society. And a community that considers that it has to give a contribution to a better social life to the Czech people. Because they will improve either together or the Church will not improve at all alone.
Thanks there to Archbishop Diego Cauzero, Apostolic Nuncio to the Czech Republic, talking to my colleague Linda Bordoni. And Linda will be travelling to Prague to keep us up to date with all the Pope's activities during his 3-day pastoral visit to the Czech Republic. Communications directors from Anglican dioceses across the United Kingdom were in Rome recently, visiting Vatican and Italian media experts with a view to increasing cooperation with the Catholic Church. After meeting with papal spokesman Father Federico Lombardi here at Vatican Radio, the group of around 40 press and media officers visited the Italian bishop's TV station Sat 2000, attended the Pope's general audience, held workshops at the St. Egidio and Caritas headquarters, and discovered more about communications training at both the Salesian University and the Opus Dei run University of Santa Croce. It was a whirlwind tour for many of the media men and women who were visiting Rome and the Vatican for the very first time.
Now, I wrote this morning that I'd hoped to go to see the tomb of John Paul II, but I haven't had time.
Bishop Nick Baines of Croydon in the Diocese of Southwark is in charge of communications for the Church of England. After accompanying the group at this Rome conference, he sat down with me to talk about his impressions and his hopes for closer ecumenical cooperation.
I'm going away with a pile of questions, really. But I think the openness of all the people we've met, you know, openness, for example, at the Salesian University, talking about how the media work and how some of their students are engaging with old media and old forms of communication as well as new. And questions about whether our engagement with the world as a church should challenge our theology and not just be us telling the world what the answer is. That has been the biggest question for me that I've been trying to grapple with. And I think it's run through just about every session we've had.
It's something you struggle with. You've written a number of books on this sort of issue as well, haven't you?
Well, I think there are many ways of understanding what the role of the church is. I try to keep it simple. And one of the phrases I use is that the church is called to create the space in which people can find that they have been found by God. We think we found God. In fact, we find that he's found us. And if you can keep it simple like that, then all the other stuff has to work to that end. I don't want to be a slave to an institution. And I want to be a follower of truth, not just always what the institution tells me is the truth. And I think we've got to keep that cutting edge. Otherwise, out in the world, we can keep propagating a line, ain't necessarily going to get heard or understood.
There are many who say it's not getting heard at all. England is a particularly secular society, even amongst secular countries of Europe. What are we doing wrong and what are your hopes for doing it better?
Well, I don't think it's necessary that people are doing it wrong. I think it is a very difficult environment for the Christian church. But I think we're particularly bad at being creative. So you can't blame someone for not hearing what we are saying. We have to find ways of enabling people to hear and understand the truth about God. Now, Jesus did it by taking the risk of using stories and images and pictures. Now, when you give a story or an image, you give it away because people can distort it, they can pervert it, they can half tell it, they can reinterpret it their way, they can put a particular slant on it. Now, why did Jesus do that if he thought it was so dangerous? Now, I think we've got to be less afraid. If the gospel is true, it will stand in the marketplace under all the scrutiny it faces. We don't have to protect it in that sense. I think we've, you know, in England particularly, we've got to find a myriad of ways of creatively telling the story of God.
Are you often frustrated, perhaps, by the lack of creativity, particularly on the part of the institution of your brother bishops, perhaps?
Well, I would never criticise my brother bishops. One of the things you see about in bishops is that you never see them at work, because we're all doing our own thing. But being a bishop is a fantastic opportunity, I think, to model, for good or ill, the risky ways of presenting the gospel. Now, you know, I've been criticised for the style of the books I write. I'm not writing for academics. If they want that, I'll do it. But I want to write for the people I meet in the pub and I meet in the parishes and, you know, I meet outside of the church. And however cogent our theology is, it's worthless if people out there can't hear it. So I sometimes get frustrated, but I get frustrated with me. And I'll tell you why. Because when bishops say, oh, the church is bad at this, that, or the other, I always want to say, well, you're a bishop, change it. Who else is going to do it? So great freedom, you know, to be creative, but we need the courage.
You, as you say, you write a number of books which are very much directed towards the man and woman on the street, one of them based around some of your favourite songs from the 70s and 80s. Yeah. Leonard Cohen's a favourite of yours, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, I did a Radio 2 documentary on Leonard Cohen, on his song Hallelujah. And at one point, it was Guy Garvey of Elbow who won the Mercury Prize last year. And he said to me, come on, Bishop, he said, hasn't Leonard Cohen hijacked religious language? And I said, no, he's understood it. He writes about the holy and the broken, hallelujah. Now, in that one phrase, you've summed up the gospel. You know, we mess it up a million times, but the grace of God means that these complete messes of humanity can also be agents of grace. So look at all the heroes of the Bible. They're disasters, most of them. You know, Abraham tried to flog his wife off as his sister 3 times to preserve his own skin. David, you know, his personal life was not great. Simon Peter, I'll stand by you and I'll go to the death for you. And then what happens? A girl comes up and says, you're one of his mates. And he says, never heard of him in my life.
If it's ever a broken,
you know, and yet these are the agents of God's grace. So why not us? I do have a problem. I wrote a book called Scandal of Grace, The Danger of Following Jesus. Its original title was Jesus and People Like Us. And in that book, I was saying that the trouble is we turn people into saints. We put them in a stained glass window and we put a plate around their head. And then they're not like us. It's like the tabloids take criminals and say they're monsters, so we don't have to think they're like us. But actually, when you read the Gospels, when you read the Scriptures, these are people like you and me. And, you know, we'll mess it up a million times, but the grace of God says, well, I'm not surprised. Now let's get on.
Even though it all went wrong, I'll stand right here before the Lord of Song with nothing.
Another of your ways of reaching people with this very contemporary message, I suppose, is through a blog. You're known very much as the blogging bishop, aren't you? Your blog is called Musings of a Restless Bishop. Mm-hmm. Is this referring to your travels? Is it your restless soul?
A restless soul. I think the key to the kingdom of God is curiosity. When Jesus put a child in the midst and said, to enter the kingdom of heaven, you have to become like one of these little children. I don't think he meant anything other than, you know, children won't be stopped from asking why. And it's that curiosity about God, the world we live in, that we say is God's, so why aren't we exploring it and enjoying it? And it's curiosity about God, the world, and us. I think that's the key to the kingdom of God. So my restlessness is a restless impatience with myself, with some of the limitations of life, frustrations of institutions and things like that. But actually, it's more to do with just curiosity, infinite curiosity. You know, there's so much music, there's so many books, there's so many things to do and places to see and people to meet and just not enough time.
Here in Rome, you've been meeting with many people in the Catholic world also involved in communications. Mm. Do you think there could be more cooperation on this front? I mean, we tend to keep very much to our own comfort zones, don't we, really, the Catholics and the Anglicans?
I think there is some cooperation. I think we could do more. And I think following this visit, one of the things I will take back to the Church of England is how we do this more constructively. I'll be going back to chair a five-day meeting of the Meissen Commission, which is the Church of England's relations with the EKD, the German Protestant Church. And, you know, when I agreed to take that on 3 years ago, I said, you know, other people may be interested in what is a bishop, what's a church, what's baptism, all these things. Very important, but it's not where I am. Other people can do that better. I'm interested in what is our common agenda out there in the world and in Europe, and how do we work together, put some things to one side, but we have a missionary task together, and we can't do that apart. And I think the communications brief falls into that. How do we communicate the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ to a world that is sceptical?
And yet so many people say in a church which is so bitterly divided, how do we hope to communicate this message of reconciliation, of healing, of peace, when our own church is having such difficulty at the moment?
Well, there's the rub. You know, sometimes it's in our brokenness that we have to hold our hands up and say, this is what it is to live in this world. God is at work among us. And actually, too often we look at the big institutional levels and say, oh, well, you know, they can't take communion, they can't take communion. But down at the grassroots levels, especially where the pressure is on, people are going, stuff that for a game of soldiers. You know, we're doing this together, not necessarily the Eucharist, but we're going to work together, worship together, serve together. And I think more often we need to look at the lower, I think it's the higher level actually, but the local and the small things. You know, John Bell wrote a song called The Greatness of the Small. The gospel is about small things, not the massive institutional things.
What gives you most hope at the moment?
God. See, we live in a world that says that death, violence, destruction have the final word. And God says, no, it doesn't. I do, and it's resurrection. And we're a resurrection faith.
Thanks there to Anglican Bishop Nick Baines of Croydon, in charge of media and communications for the Church of England. And if you want to look up his blog to find out more about this conference, you can find it at nickbaines.wordpress.com. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio, Laudato Jesus Christus.